I intended to start with an apology for the mess in the entrance of the chapel. As you know, we're refinishing the chapel doors there. But then it became part of my meditation, so I'm not apologizing for it. Let's start with that. The previous attempt we had to refinish the door, that didn't work out too well, so we decided to strip off the finish and bring it down to the bare wood and start again. Actually, we started last week, and that leaves the doors in a mess. Newspaper, masking tape, the windows are covered, there's newspaper all over the floor. If you're here in the daytime or afternoon, there's fumes from the paint remover. So it's a messy project, and that's just how it goes. But I noticed the other day that from up here in the sanctuary, depending on the lighting, it's actually rather beautiful. The light shines through the masking tape, the little windows have little squares on them. One of them, if you look closely, it says, "The Pope is D." It must be the headline from when the Pope died, "The Pope is D." But now it's just news, old newspaper. And so, for example, when the Pope died, that was a sad day, that was a moment of mourning. But God knew that he was going to provide another pope and the church would move on, the mission of the church continues, and we're not mourning anymore. Anyway, I took a picture of this from up here, just because I thought it was beautiful. We could see the light reflecting on the granite floor, and then the light shining through those crosses on the doors. And even though it's really still a mess and an unfinished project, something beautiful about it. And then we look forward to the time when those doors are refinished and we can use them again. We take away the plastic chairs and all the newspaper, and we can enter the chapel through a beautiful entrance. Oh, we're not there yet, but we envision that. And perhaps the painters who are doing the work, they can envision it even more because they know exactly how they want it to look. You can see where I'm going with this, right? Let's go to the story of Joseph and his brothers. It's an ugly mess. For a long time, his brothers are nasty people. Some of them want to kill him. Others are willing just to sell him into slavery. He goes into slavery. He ends up not only a slave, but he's accused, falsely accused of attempting rape. He gets thrown in prison. He's in prison for years. And he has a lot to suffer. And you say, well, what good can that possibly be? Why such a terrible mess? Well, we skipped over all the wonderful and terrible details of this, and now we're here where the brothers of Joseph have come back a second time because there's famine in the promised land, and so they come to Egypt to get food. And today's reading is when Joseph reveals himself to his brothers. They can't believe it. They just can't believe it. But it's true. And the key line comes at the very end. I'm your brother Joseph, whom you once sold into Egypt. But now do not be distressed and do not reproach yourselves for having sold me here. It was really for the sake of saving lives that God sent me here ahead of you. So Joseph, who is the one who paid the price and suffered the most, although all of them suffered, and their father suffered, and it was a terrible experience, but Joseph, who suffered the most, looks at it not through the lens of his suffering, not through the newspaper and masking tape and paint remover. He looks at it from the perspective of God bringing about a wonderful thing, something like looking at these doors and saying how wonderful it will be when they're finally refinished and we can use them again. God sent me here ahead of you. It's an extraordinary way of seeing reality, right? To see it from God's perspective so that he doesn't get distracted by the injustice of it. He sees the beauty of it. Now, unfortunately, the way the liturgy has carved up this story to put little pieces each day. Well, we'll be reading again from these last chapters of the book of Genesis tomorrow and again on Saturday. But one of the things that gets skipped over is the process by which Joseph sees whether his brothers have changed or not. Or you could say the process by which he exposes to his brothers their own grave wrongdoing. This is actually an example of what Jesus refers to as turning the other cheek. Joseph, when he sees his brothers, could have taken revenge on them. You made me suffer, now I'm going to make you suffer. Or he could have said, forget it, let's rejoice together now that we're together, pretend that nothing bad ever happened. Neither of those options is the right option. The revenge option just makes things worse for everybody. The pretending that nothing ever went wrong avoids the requirements of justice. It doesn't move them to repentance. So Joseph very wisely puts them through some stages, some tests, to see if they're really still as evil as they were years ago. That's why he goes through this whole thing about bring your younger brother. And like I say, the liturgy skipped over all that, but it's worth reading it again if you want to get a marvelous story of how to turn the other cheek. What he does is he moves them to, now he knows the famine's going to last for 7 years, so he knows they're going to come back again, right? That was part of the dream of the Pharaoh. Anyway, he insists that they bring their youngest brother, that's his younger brother, Benjamin. And then when Benjamin gets there, he favors Benjamin. He treats him better than all the others, which is exactly what their father Jacob did to him. And that's what moved them to such jealousy and hatred. And so he favors Benjamin as if to see, are they going to be jealous of him too? Are they going to try to destroy Benjamin now because he's the favored one? One of the key points in the whole story is when he, again, putting them to the test, he says, no, and remember he put the chalice or the goblet in the possessions of Benjamin to make him look like the guilty one, to see what they would do. Would they sacrifice Benjamin for their own skin? Would they give up one brother again like they did to him and just go off with their provisions? They don't. They all come back humbly. They all come back acknowledging that they're not worthy of his favor. And then the key thing here, one of the key things which you get skipped over, is Judah, one of the brothers. I think he's the fourth one. Judah, who speaks in today's reading and explains the whole issue and why they can't just leave Benjamin behind and go back to their father. And then he says, and we didn't get this in the reading, he says, I'll take Benjamin's place. You keep me. We can't do that to our father. We can't afflict him with the loss of another precious son of his. So I'll be the one to stay here so Benjamin can go home. You see what happens there? He shows a complete reversal in the brothers. Now they're not sacrificing Joseph for their advantage. Now Judah said, no, I'll sacrifice myself for the advantage of my brother. And once Joseph sees that, he realizes he can't keep this a secret anymore. It's once he sees that the brothers have faced the reality of their wrongdoing and are willing to pay the price, then he says, okay, now look at it from God's perspective. It's a very beautiful story. And there's a lot more to it than that. But let's apply this now. We are, in the gospel, identified as missionaries, like the apostles, or like we heard on Sunday, the 72 disciples. This is part of being a disciple of Jesus. It's not simply to follow him, but to go forth, sent out by him, as his representatives. As we do this, we are going to run into a mess. We live in a messy world, in a fallen world, a sin-riddled world. We're going to run into doors that are not usable because they're ugly and in the process of being refinished. We're going to run into opposition. We're going to run into betrayal. And Jesus, in sending us out, says, okay, you don't have to bring anything with you. You don't have to take care of yourselves because you are the recipients before you are the givers. What you receive without cost, you give without cost. You're already being taken care of, so don't worry about the messy business that you're going to find yourself in. If someone is willing to accept the message, okay, stay there. Be an instrument of peace for that household or that town. You won't lose your peace if you're with people who are willing to live in peace with you. But there will be people, households and towns, that will not receive you. And if that happens, your peace will return to you. In other words, don't lose your peace simply because somebody hates you or rejects you. Don't lose your peace. Like Joseph. He's a man at peace, even though he suffered terribly. He's a man at peace. He sees the hand of God. Of course, he's living in luxury and wealth at this point. But it wasn't so long ago that he was a slave and a prisoner. Okay, then it says Jesus' instructions to us is if someone doesn't listen to you or doesn't receive you, you shake the dust off. Shake the dust off. Let the impact of their wrongdoing fall on them and not on you. Don't be vengeful or resentful. If they don't accept the peace, they won't have peace. You see, what this instruction does is it takes the perspective of God, like Joseph does. Yes, it will be messy, it will be painful, there will be injustices, yes. Don't get upset about that, because God is doing something that's out of your control and out of your awareness. There's no way Joseph or his brothers could know what God was doing through most of that. In fact, they didn't know it at all until the very end. But God was at work through the whole thing. And this is true for us as well. As we go forth, and our mission territory is usually our workplace, our family, our neighborhood, our parishes and communities, our friends. As we go into this work, this mission field, we can't see what God is doing. We can't, not with our natural eyes. We can see with faith that God is doing something, but we don't know what it is. So how can we live at peace when things go wrong? Because we know that God is working out things so good. That's the perspective of faith. That's the perspective of Joseph. Go to that line again. Don't reproach yourselves for your wrongdoing. Admit it. Face the truth of your sin. But realize it was really for the sake of saving lives that God sent me here ahead of you. What God did is different than what you did. What God is doing is different from what we're doing. Now, we can cooperate, and that's what we're supposed to do, but we're not working out the whole thing here. We're just his little instruments in this moment, in this place. And we can live in peace with that because we trust that God is working it out. So the psalm tells us the same thing. Remember the marvels the Lord has done. And it recounts the whole story here in Psalm 105, at least this section of it. The Lord had a famine, ruined the crop. Then he sent a man before them, Joseph sold as a slave, weighed him down with fetters, bound with chains, until the word of the Lord proved him true. Now, we have our own fetters, we have our own famines, we have our own hardships, but don't lose your peace. Put your trust in God and know that he's working out a very grand plan for you, with you, through you, for others. Let us put our trust in the Lord and go forward.